Thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole. Will T. Ray Jeezy's out, man. It's voting Tuesday, man. It's election Tuesday. So you know what's on and popping. You know the Urban Sports Scene is part of Sports Journey. Make sure you check us out at sportsjourney.com. You'll find all kinds of sports content, especially for your DMV sports teams. Also, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. I know you all are excited about, you know, Election Tuesday. I just want to make sure I got you all get a little break with sports content, you know, just keep your mind off things while you're looking at the projections and seeing what's going on in some of these states. What's going on? But what's going on, Will T?
Nothing much, man. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, man. You know, it's Election Tuesday. A lot of people are excited. They've been waiting for this day.
Yeah, they have been. But hopefully for the next hour, we can give people a little reprieve
yeah.
Away from, you know, the election talk and any tension they're feeling or any anticipation or anything, you know. So let's just talk some sports.
I know, man. That's the goal, man. Hey, Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. We'll talk about the Washington football team's upcoming game against the New York Giants at 8:20. We'll talk about Washington's defensive end, Ryan Kerrigan, reportedly asking him to be traded at 8:30. Washington Wizards guard Bradley Beal's comments on the Old Man and the Three podcast with J.J. Redick and Tommy Alter. Finally, we'll talk about Gervonta Tank Davis knocking out Leo Santa Cruz to become the WBA super featherweight champ. But first, the Washington football team takes on the New York Giants Sunday. After watching Monday night's the Giants compete against the Buccaneers on Monday night, should Washington fans really feel confident for a victory over the Giants?
No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Just simply because this Washington offense, we've shown it's a proven fact throughout the season that this Washington offense can't generate a lot of yardage in the passing game or the run game consistently, particularly in the run game. So what you have is you have Washington's offense and the Giants offense, and quite frankly, if you ask me to just line each, you know, at the skill position, I would have to say that the Giants have an advantage, especially at the wide receiver position
and tight end,
at the tight end position.
Yeah.
As far as quarterback play, look, I think Kyle Allen is mediocre.
Yeah.
Mediocre quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that Daniel Jones turns the ball over, but he showed yesterday evening against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that he can make some plays when that Giants team back is against the wall.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you match up Washington's offense compared to the Giants' offense, you're right. I think, to me, the Giants have the advantage. You have, you know, Ingram at tight end. You have Shepard. At wide receiver, you have Slayton,
Golden Tate.
You know what I mean? So they have weapons on the offensive side of the football. And the thing about Daniel Jones, he's not consistent. He's very erratic. But we've seen this throughout the whole season. The dude does make plays. I mean, he's had some big runs in terms of being a mobile quarterback. And like you said, you know, even though, you know, it was off and on, a lot of erratic play, but down the stretch he did make a big pass to Golden Tate to get them the opportunity to almost tie that football game. If they get the 2-point conversion, they tie it. So they make plays. I don't think this is a game. A lot of fans before the outcome on Monday night, a lot of people were talking about, yo, this is an opportunity to to go 3-5, you know, or if they had won in the Mel Lions earlier, this team could have an opportunity to play to be 500. But when you look at what the Giants have done throughout this season, they've competed. You know, people don't want to talk about it, but they competed in most of the games they've been in. Other than probably Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh blew them out, but they competed against the Rams. You saw what they did with Tampa Bay, a team that everybody thought was a Super Bowl contender. They've competed. Now, you know, Washington is one of the easier teams they've seen this season, and they feel the same way. They feel like, you know what, we can get right by playing Washington, just like Washington fans feel the same way. But if we're being real and being honest, we're not being fans. Yo, after what you saw against Tampa, how can you feel that? Hey, this is gonna be a cake. This is gonna be a cupcake of a game for the Washington football team.
I totally agree with you, especially if you look at what the Giants front seven, they were able to get to Tom Brady,
mm-hmm.
right? And on those downs where they were able to sack Tom Brady, more often than not, those were coverage sacks.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. There were sacks where, you know, either they were in a man-to-man or zone defense, and they matched up against those Tampa Bay wide receivers very well. So that doesn't lend, to me, that just doesn't lend a lot of confidence coming into Sunday, knowing what Washington has at wide receiver, what they have specifically in Terry McLaurin. Terry McLaurin,
mm-hmm.
Who is essentially Washington's passing offense.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
Has him and Logan Thomas. So if they're able to take away Terry McLaurin like they did, you know, in certain instances,
Evans
and Scotty Miller. And then, you know, they were able to hold they were outside of the one touchdown that Gronk caught. They were able to contain Gronk.
Yeah.
It just doesn't bode well for Washington this Sunday, in my opinion.
I mean, when you look at it, because, they're all valid points. I mean, Tampa has a bunch of weapons, right? Washington doesn't have weapons, but like you said, they held it down. Like, they held Tampa with all the talent that Tampa does have. They held it down. Tampa was scoring 30 points. I think they were averaging about 30 points or a little bit over 30 points over the last some odd games. So they've been a team that scores often. And you can tell, like, Brady looked pedestrian in that game. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, Daniel Jones gave him opportunities to kind of to get right with the turnovers. But Brady wasn't Brady. He wasn't special. But he still was. They had more talent. You give that team a short field with Gronk, with Mike Evans, like you meant Scotty Miller. The list goes on and on. This team is super talented. I'm thinking of they have a wide receiver from Penn State too.
Mickens
is the other kid. I don't know if he played. He played slot for them. Oh God. We'll look it up. But like this team, they're deep. And then when you look at, like, they're deep offensively, and Washington doesn't have that many weapons. And when you're looking at Scary Terry, that's just a guy. That's one guy. You know, he's played at a high level this year, but that's one guy. And I see the Giants will. It's going to be an easier matchup for the Giants to say, okay, we got to focus on McLaurin. Let's take him out. You know what I mean? And this team is not like the Dallas Cowboys. Like, this team, speaking of the Giants, they are able to stop the run. They are able to give you friction when you're trying to run football.
You were referring to Chris Godwin.
Yeah, Godwin. Thank you. Godwin, yeah. Who is a beast. Yeah. Godwin's a beast. So, and you know what I mean? So, they have weapons. Like, Tampa has a bunch of weapons, and the Giants were able to stay in that game. And so, yeah, if I'm a Washington fan, I don't feel comfortable, to be honest with you. I'm not comfortable. And I am a Washington fan, but I'm not comfortable. I look at that game, I'm like, this team already beat you? I know there's no moral victories in a loss. But you know what I mean? But if I'm the Giants, I'm like, yo, you all had Tampa going to the bowl. And we should have beat them. And now we got Washington? Oh, we should. If we play the same way, Washington ain't going to hang with us.
I totally agree with
you. Yeah, so I think Washington has I think fans need to chill out when they look at these schedules. Again, you got to know who your team is and what your team is about. A lot of times when we watch, you know, because you're a homer and you see the team's record and you just assume or you think like this team is better. You know, this team, your team should beat that team. But look at how your team is actually playing and look what they've done, you know, against common opponents or – within that schedule and who what they've done it within that schedule. Because I've we said this Will on prior shows, like when this team plays this season, and it's just it's the record. It says what it is what it is. When they play a team that's playing that's over 500, they get blown out. They don't compete. Well, the Giants have competed against teams that are over 500. This team against against a mobile quarterback, they struggled throughout the season against mobile quarterbacks. Daniel Jones is a mobile quarterback, so this matchup isn't the best matchup in the world, but it is a game that is winnable. In the aspect of, you know, some of these games are coming down the pike. Like, yeah, if you look at this Giants game, yeah, it's winnable, you know, especially if you get your defense to step up, which they did in the Meadowlands. Like, they played well enough to win the football game, but they did give up big plays at the same time.
But I think that is where this team has the distinct advantage.
Yeah.
Washington, their defensive line against the Giants' offensive line,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
That Washington front four, we know has shown flashes of being a terror.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Deron Payne and Montez Sweat and Chase Young and Ryan Kerrigan.
Jonathan Allen. Right.
Jonathan Allen mm-hmm. also. They've shown that they can be a terror in spurts. Right?
Yeah. Agreed.
Against Philadelphia, the first game of the season, that's probably the most complete game that they've been dominant. Up front on with their defensive front
four. Yeah, agreed.
So the question is, can they give that same level of energy and effort this Sunday against the Giants, against a offensive line that, let's just be frank, is inferior to the talent that Washington has on their defensive line?
Yeah, that's the matchup. That's the matchup that's going to tell you what's going to happen in this game. That's going to tell you if Washington wins the football game or loses the football game. They just can't be good, right? I think we're both thinking the same thing. They got to be dominant. They got to do what they did against the Eagles, and they got to do what they did against the Cowboys. They got to dominate. They got to take advantage of every situation. Because against the Giants, when they played them up in New York, that offensive line wasn't great either, but they didn't dominate that game. They didn't dominate the game against the Giants. Now you got an opportunity. You have all your guns in terms of the front four. You're not going to have Matt Ioannidis, but you're going to have enough guns to do work. You're going to have Chase Young and Montez Sweat in that game healthy. So you're going to see, all right, can these two dudes dominate? And we don't want to. And I think if you're a Washington football team fan, you don't want to see. Like you want to see this front dominate the Giants. You don't want to see this front do what they like. We don't want the excuse to say, okay, this team can only dominate injured offensive linemen. You know what I'm saying? Like, or replacements. Like, you've seen that with the Eagles and you saw that with the Dallas Cowboys. Like, they dominated an offensive, both of those offensive lines, but they weren't healthy and they were playing with replacements. You want them to, they're playing against a Giants team where Daniel Jones gets sacked a lot, typically. You want to see them actually put their foot on the pedal and sack him and dominate this game, because they dominate the game, they have a great chance of winning. If they don't dominate, if they just play good, they have a great chance of losing that football game.
Speaking of the Giants, I'm just thinking about it. I can't think of a team in recent history that's picked in the top 10 within, you know, a 5-year span has gotten less from that top 10 talent than the Giants have over. When you think of Andrew Thomas, their offensive tackle mm-hmm. they've drafted in 2020, who's played all right.
Yeah.
You know, not a world beater. Number four overall.
Yeah.
Saquon Barkley, who was the number two pick, and I believe in 2017.
He was a beast, though, right? We are acknowledging he's a beast.
But,
all right.
He's a beast, but he's injured.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, so okay.
He isn't giving you the level of production that you thought he would give you consistently.
Yeah, okay.
And then Daniel Jones, who's coming into his second season, I'm just going to be honest with you. At best, he looks like he could be one of those guys, and Ray will probably get mad at me, you know, like
Matt Ryan.
Alex Smith. No, I wouldn't even say Matt Ryan. Okay. Matt Ryan is far better. Matt Ryan is far better than anything to me that Daniel Jones could ever be,
mm-hmm.
right? Daniel Jones looks like the best he'll be is a guy,
yeah.
you know, a middle of the pack quarterback, somewhere between 12 to 16. If he's one of those quarterbacks, then if he gets that level of play from them consistently, then they'll be lucky.
Yeah. No, I think that. Like, I actually, you know what? I like Daniel Jones. I mean, he's young. You know what? We've gone to this point in football where it's crazy. Like, when we were young, like when we were younger watching football and you saw a second year quarterback, you knew it was a growing process, right? Like, to become great, you had to go through some trials and tribulations. You had to kind of struggle before you kind of felt yourself. When you look at Daniel Jones, I feel like he's going through the process. Yeah, he turns the football over, but like you said, against the Bucks, like, he showed you that he can make plays. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you see that, you just know, like, all right, if this guy's coached up correctly and it's a process and he learns from his mistakes, he could be a solid NFL quarterback. Like, he can help you win football games.
I get what you're saying. I totally understand what you're saying. But, well, let's just be honest here, right?
Yeah.
Usually within the largest leap, mm-hmm. from a progression standpoint, is usually made from your first year to your second year. Now, I know that he's in a new offense with Jason Garrett.
Yeah.
But there's just, you know, it doesn't seem to me as if he has a feel in the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
One. Two, he turns the ball over, too many interceptions, too many fumbles.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to be honest with you. You know, when we look back to our youth and we're evaluating those quarterbacks who had their struggles, those guys often didn't have any weapons.
Yeah, he got weapons. Yeah, it's true.
Daniel Jones has weapons.
Yeah, he got some weapons.
I'm not saying he has elite weapons.
No, he has weapons.
You can't. You can't tell me that if, you know, Sterling Shepard, Golden Tate,
mm-hmm.
and Slayton, mm-hmm. and Evan Ingram, those guys aren't slouches.
Yeah, you had Saquon. He still weren't doing anything. He has weapons. I agree. I just think that, you know, when you look at growth, there is some growth. But, yeah, you would hope for him to turn it on, you know, sooner rather than later. You know, but it's funny. Like, the Giants are sticking with him. They're riding it out, trying to see what they can get out of him. Washington ain't doing it. They ain't do that with Dwayne.
I mean, that's the difference between an organization that's really vested in the future and
mm-hmm.
the success
yeah.
of a quarterback versus an organization where you have a guy who's come in, and let's just be frank, he's brought everyone from Carolina,
yeah.
from his old stomping grounds to this one. So what makes you think that he isn't going to want to get his guy at quarterback in if he's shown that he's willing to, you know, get rid of everything that was here prior to him?
Yeah.
It doesn't meet his standards.
Yeah.
He hasn't put a seal of approval on
mm-hmm. him. You can tell, obviously, Dwayne wasn't a guy he was fixated on. He wanted his, you know, he got comfortable with his guys, and he wanted to see his guy work within this offense. And, you know, he wasn't a believer in Dwayne. Well, I'm going to say he wasn't a believer in Dwayne. I think that's a little harsh, but when you're more comfortable with somebody and you have more of a relationship with a guy that you've seen grow in a prior setting or environment, the person that has been established in a new environment that you're in, you don't have that type of leeway with, because you're like, you know what, in the back of your mind, there is a sense of biasness, right? I mean, let's keep it a buck. There is a sense of biasness. So you're probably like, I think Kyle can do this.
I was just about to say the same thing. You hit on it, and the key word is bias.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You have a bias. You've already formulated an opinion of a guy, and if a guy doesn't kind of supersede your
yep.
negative perception of him,
yeah,
then you're automatically going to say, you know what, I'm done with this guy. Let me go with my guy.
Yeah.
And if my guy isn't the long term answer, I'll draft my guy, and I can put my stamp, if I seal of approval on him.
Exactly. I think that's definitely what's happening. All right. Reportedly, Ryan Kerrigan wanted to be traded, but he's still on the roster. We'll talk about this after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
Yeti.
Deuces.
We'll be right back.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Will T, Ray Jeezy's out. Now part, again, we're now part of Sports Journeys. Make sure you check us out at sportsjourney.com. All right. It was reported that Washington football team's defensive end, Ryan Kerrigan, big-time sack leader, requested to be traded. He's still on the roster. Did they make the right move by not trading him during the trade deadline?
Absolutely not.
Mm. Yeah, tell him, we'll see.
I do not believe that they made the right move. Here's why. Mm. Your defensive line, your front four, that is a position of strength.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You have depth there.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Kerrigan, realistically, is a guy who just provides you depth mm-hmm. at this point of his career.
Yeah.
Last game, I believe he only played 7 snaps.
Yeah.
Prior to the bye week.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a guy who, although, you know, all-time sack leader, last year of his contract, looks like you have a youth movement going up front, but he seems as if he's a good character guy, good locker room guy.
Mm-hmm.
Why not get rid of him for
something?
A 4th or a 5th round pick.
Something. Why? We're
and if, and yeah. if he still has a love for this Washington football team, he could always come. You can always sign him back as a free agent.
Yeah, my issue is that he asked to be if it's true, he asked to be traded, right? So chances are, once the season's over, he's going elsewhere. You know what I mean? Like, so you're basically letting him go for nothing. If teams are interested in him, and like you said, Will T, it's a position of strength. They already have 2 young bulls already. You trade them. You already got trade them.
Well. Maybe this goes into the thinking of the front office.
Maybe.
Maybe they think, all right, let's get the compensatory pick for him.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, we don't know what the salary cap situation will be mm-hmm. for the league next year, but if Washington loses him and they don't sign back enough free agents, maybe Washington gets that 3rd-round compensatory pick and they're perfectly happy with that.
Maybe.
Which I can understand, but
I don't know, man.
If you ask me if he's asking to be traded and if there was a fair
compensation
value back from him, mm-hmm. trade compensation back for him, I would say go ahead and do it. But like I said, this information we aren't privy to,
mm-hmm.
maybe they didn't receive fair compensation for him.
Yeah.
That's why he's still here in Washington.
Maybe, because, you know, but Ron Rivera was saying, you know, off the jump, like, we're not trading him. And I mean, and if that's true, then I'm like, that's kind of foolish to me. Like, you should let him go. You should trade him. Because at the end of the day, you can play your other – you got Nate Orchard, who played with you last year, who did well when he came and spelled in for Ryan Kerrigan when Kerrigan went down. So you got Nate Orchard. You got other young dudes that could be good rotationary guys. So you don't need Ryan Kerrigan – on the field often, because you're really not even, like you said, Will, you're not really, it's not like you're seeing that many snaps anyway. You're pretty much featuring Chase Young and Montez Sweat, and they are producing. So at the end of the day, yeah, you may just want him, or you want him for the locker room. Okay, have him for the locker room. That's fine. But when you're looking at a rebuild, because this is still a rebuild, I don't care what they tell you, this is a rebuild, why not stock up on picks? I don't care if it's a 4th, 5th round pick. If it's a 5th round pick, okay, get the 5th round pick. Do something with it, because it looks like he's going to leave anyway. Go ahead.
It just doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It doesn't make sense to me when, you know, and I know things are fluid and they change often, but when you have a coach who's overseeing everything, he comes in and he says, this is going to be a learning year for us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If it's going to, in fact, be a learning year, now I understand the division is terrible.
Yeah.
That you realistically are not that far out from competing for the NFC East title. But if you're going to stay true to your vision of this being a learning year, trade him, get younger guys on the field,
mm-hmm.
coach those guys up. You have a pick. I don't think, you know, Kyle Smith and Doug Williams, they've done a pretty good job with finding you
some young
value
guy.
Players yeah. in the draft
they have.
That you can coach up and you can develop, mm-hmm. especially in the later rounds.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why that isn't the direction that this team went in.
Yeah, it should be. And I know a lot of people are sentimental when it comes to Ryan Kerrigan. You know, he's a fan favorite. I get it. But when we just looking at business, I mean, football moves, right? You know, Bill Belichick wouldn't play. Bill Belichick would already trade him already. Bill ain't loyal to that.
Bill Look, let's not forget, Bill Belichick traded Richard Seymour.
Yeah.
For a first-round pick.
Yeah.
Richard Seymour, so, at that time,
was elite.
Sent him to the Raiders, yeah. was a beast.
Yes. Yeah, Bill Belichick will let you go, man. So don't make it seem like if Bill can do it, this team can do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if Bill's won Super Bowls, man, if he can do it, like, don't feel bad. Like, oh, man, we're going to let Ryan go. You know, he's like the heart and soul for the Washington football team. Could you imagine if he played in a 4-3 all of his life? Well, I'm telling you, he hasn't. So it's don't bring it up. It's unfortunate, but he hasn't. And this team has two dudes who are younger and spryer and fast off the edges that will get you more sacks at this point in their careers than compared to Ryan Kerrigan. So, nah, like, don't.
The most important thing is those two guys are under
contracts.
Under control mm-hmm. for 3 to 4 more years.
Yes. So, when you look at it, Ryan. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, Washington front office. I think you should let Ryan go. I think that would have been the best play. But it is what it is. I know some of you fans are listening. Are like, nah, man, Ryan the beast. This is good for the depth. You know, if one of those dudes go down, we got Ryan. I mean, does it really matter? Don't let the smoke, like, you know, blur your vision, man. It still is a rebuilding year. Don't forget that. It is still a rebuilding year, regardless of what folks are trying to make are saying to you within that organization. Because you seen the talent on the field? It's rebuilding. There are players on the market that would help this team immensely, and they're not going to pick them up. So you know they're rebuilding. All right. Is Bill really committed to the Wizards? We'll discuss this after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
The Ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy is out. Also, we are part of Sports Journey, so make sure you check us out at sportsjourney.com. On the Old Man and the three podcast with JJ Redick and Tommy Alter. Washington Wizards shooting guard Bradley Beal talked about why he has a player option for the 2020 to 2023 season. Listen to the clip.
See, might turn out, yeah, the way free agency might turn out. But no, it you know, you're, I think it's you're guaranteed for 2021, 2022, and then you got the player option on in the summer of 2022. Walk me through that sort of process and that decision to stay with the Wizards and to sort of set yourself up for that long-term deal after year 10.
It was more or less, you know, do I want to have something built around me, you know, and I had that opportunity to do it here, or you know, do I want to kind of test the waters, you know, and that's kind of what made me do so. But I signed my deal and kind of, you know, structured it to where I still have some flexibility, because at the end of the day, I still want to win, you know, and the organization has to show me that we want to win. You know, I want to see what John's like as well. So we, you know, there's always going to be, you know, hoping in that direction, but you still want to be able to protect yourself and, you know, kind of be selfish in that regard. And, you know, how can I, you know, create some type of flexibility for myself, you know, if, you know, we aren't winning, you know, if I do choose to get out. So that's why I was more or less a 2 year with 1-1 versus, you know, the full 3 year. And so, and then on top of that, you know, the all NBA kind of screwed me too. And then so the 10-year vet max as well. But, you know, you just kind of trying to position myself, you know, later down the line, you know, with an organization that I have an opportunity to build around myself. But, you know, at the same time, I want to win, and they know that, and they have to show that.
All right. Will, Bradley Beal had – so hold on. Let me patch in Will. Be smart to patch in Will before I say, hey, Will. All right, now – all right, Will is now patched in. I apologize, folks. All right, Will. Is Bill truly committed to the Wizards after you heard the interview? Like, is he truly committed to this organization?
I think he's committed to a certain point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your commitment to someone only goes so far.
Facts.
Your loyalty to people only goes so far, you know, up to a point where it interferes with your self-interest.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think Bradley Beal is committed. He wants to see how John Wall is going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, I think he wants to see how him and John Wall are going to play together.
I think so too.
Next season, for these next two seasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a totally different dynamic. This was clearly John Wall's team about a year, you know, the preceding 2 years.
Yeah.
Prior to John Wall getting injured. Now, Bradley Beal's a guy who averaged 30, also averaged 6 assists,
mm-hmm.
6 rebounds. Even though he was snubbed as an all-star, he's probably saying, hey, I'm no longer just a sidekick.
Yeah.
I'm no longer just a guy who you get into the lane and try to find. I'm a guy who creates shots and creates offense for myself and others also.
Mm-hmm.
So how are we going to work this out? How is Scott Brooks going to create an offense with an ebb and flow where both of these guys get their touches?
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. So this is the question I would have for you too, because I think that those are all valid points. I think that's what he's really looking at, to see how him and John Wall will play together and to see what the dynamic will be, right? That's the main thing. Like, what will the dynamic be? So say John Wall is healthy and you're getting the John Wall that helped lead this team to the postseason. Does that John Wall take a second seat to Bradley Beal?
A 2010 guy?
Yeah.
Which is very rare in this league.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Does John Wall still have the speed,
mm-hmm.
the endurance, and the ability to get to the bucket?
Right? Yeah.
Because we've seen guys, and I don't want to say John Wall's game is built off athleticism, because it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't. But one of the components that makes him extremely special is his athleticism.
Oh my God, it's amazing.
His size and his athleticism and his speed. So is he that same guy who can go 94 feet in a blink of an eye?
Yeah.
And gets to the bucket and still take those hits and then not take a toll on his body? Or is he, does he come back playing more of a, like, you know, like a guy like Tony Parker was,
yeah,
you know, during, after I say probably that first or second championship in San Antonio, mm-hmm. where guys couldn't go up under a screen anymore.
Mm-hmm.
John Wall is knocking down 3-pointers. John mm-hmm. Wall is knocking down pull-up jumpers consistently.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting. And I tell you what, man, I'm anticipating Adam Silver and the NBA and the NBPA coming to agreement on potentially getting the season started around Christmas.
Oh, I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen. It's going to happen in December. All this talk about players is too soon. It's going to happen in December. I mean, if you want a basketball season and a real basketball season, it does have to happen in December. But back to Walt, I've seen Walt's clips. I don't know if you've seen him online. Some of his, because he's been playing a lot of pickup game with Michael Beasley and company, actually. And dude, I don't like going on pickup games in terms of clips because they show you the best of the best, right? But bruh, like his J look better. Well, you can tell he put work in it. That I will say.
Yeah, you played the clip of, you know, Bradley Beal with JJ Redick.
Yeah.
But also John Wall had an interview with Gilbert Arenas.
Yeah, that was good. I saw that. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with No Chill Gil podcast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he talked about, you know, him going to California to play pickup games with Kyrie Irving, mm-hmm. Kevin Durant, and Michael Beasley. And saying specifically that during those pickup games, he came there to compete and he came there to get better. So mm-hmm. one of the things he's been consistently working on is his 3-point shooting.
Yeah. And you can see it. Yeah, you can see it. I will say, though, by watching the clips, it's hard to gauge it, but I don't think he has the same speed, because that speed was something totally different. I don't think it's the same speed. But in terms of off the bounce, like the jumping off, yeah, he still got that. He still got lift. He still got lift.
Yeah, and that was one of the concerns with him coming off of that heel injury
mm-hmm.
that kept him out of the 2019-2020 season. It'll be interesting to see the dynamic of how those guys play off of each other. And one thing I'm also curious to see is if Tommy Shepherd in his front office can make a move for a big man who's coming off of an injury that played for
the Lakers,
a championship caliber team. And the guy I'm referring to is DeMarcus Cousins.
Of course, yeah, I know. I know. That's Wall's boy. That's Wall's boy. Yeah. So.
Those two are very tight.
Mm-hmm.
John Wall has a lot to prove. DeMarcus Cousins, I'm sure, feels as if he has a lot to prove. So, you know, does he want to prove it by being the third or fourth leg in, you know, for the Lakers?
Yeah.
Or does he say, I want to let the league know I'm still a beast?
Yeah.
And he signs with Washington.
It's a tough decision, right? That's a real tough.
This offense.
Yeah, that's a real tough decision. Because, you know, obviously, you know, I would love for him to sign with the Lakers. I felt so bad for him when he had that ACL injury. I thought that he was going to be able to have some type of impact with his team. And he is close with AD, so I thought they would, you know, be able to play together. Because I do think I have faith in Boogie Cousins. I think if he get an opportunity to get healthy, rest his body fully. Because, again, we talked about this before on prior shows that he's not predicated on athleticism. He's predicated on skill. So he's a guy that should still be able to do what he was doing prior to the injury. That's just my belief. I think he's still capable of doing it because he's a skilled basketball player. I think a lot of people get
skill, and on top of that skill, he's a player who knows how to use
his angles and body. Yep, definitely. So he's a guy that I think that will still be able to. If he gets a fair chance, and minutes, he can still put up boogie-like numbers. I put it that way. He can put up boogie-like numbers. I told if John Wall can, you know, West can convince those dudes to sign Boogie, I think it would be a steal. Like I'm a firm believer that Boogie will get comeback player of the year. Like he's that good of a talented basketball player.
I don't know the Wizards cap situation off the top of my head. I don't have it in front of me. Mm-hmm. But if you're able to sign Davis Bertans for a reasonable contract, and get Boogie Cousins.
Oh my God, you have an opportunity.
You're competing to be a top five team in the East.
Yep, I agree. I agree. And the thing, I don't want to skip over what you said, because I think this is the main thing. I know I may sound a little redundant, but it's not that. I think for Bill, it's more of, and this is something that Scott Brooks is going to have to kind of. Scott Brooks, it's a coach. It's going to be a coach thing. It's going to be, yo, who am I? Who do I want to be my lead dog? Because we all know, like people say, we're sharing responsibilities, but that's BS. You know, there's one lead dog. You know what I mean? Like when it's on the court, you can tell who's the lead dog. You know what I mean? Like when OKC was Russ, when Russ and Paul George, they said we both lead dogs. It was really Russ, regardless of what Paul George. It was really Russ. You know, like when you're on the court, one dude just shows out more. It is what it is. You know what I mean? That's the dynamics of basketball. It's going to be interesting to see what Scott Brooks does with that situation, because it sounds like, you know, Bradley Beal he's looking for this team to be built around him, and, you know, but he does want to see where John Wall's at, but he wants to see how that relationship works on the court. Will it be my team and John Wall, you know, just sets me up type of thing?
Yep.
You know, and that's what
So I'm interested, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just be honest. This isn't the first time that Scott Brooks as a head coach has kind of faced this type of dynamic.
Yeah. There you go.
And OKC.
AC. Yep.
It didn't, you know, depending on what reports you listen to, mm-hmm. it necessarily didn't work out, or it didn't reach its full potential mm-hmm. there. But it'd be interesting to see how he handles that and creates an offense. Or Bradley Beal wasn't an all-star, but he should have been an all-star.
Yeah,
these two all-star level players to play in.
Yeah, we'll see, man. We'll see. All right, man. Tank hit Santa Cruz with the meanest uppercut to become the WBA super featherweight champ. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the fight after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
Get it.
Deuces.
Come on, man. And with the local DBC news, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback. Morris Solo, but tonight, don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants. What's up with the fear? Making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom, explosion. Overpowering, over the competition. I'm towering, wreck his shot. When I drop these lyrics that'll make you call the cops. Don't you dare stare. You better move. Don't ever compare me to the rest that'll all get sliced and diced. Competition's paying the price. I'm gonna knock you out. Mama said knock you out. I'm gonna knock you out. Mama said knock you out. I'm gonna knock you out. Mama said knock you out. I'm gonna knock you out. Mama said knock you out. Don't you call this a regular jam. I'm gonna rock this land. I'm gonna take this city, bitty world by storm. And I'm just getting warm.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T, myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy is out. We're also part of Sports Journey, so make sure you check us out. Check us out at sportsjourney.com. Saturday, Gervonta Tank Davis KO'd Leo Santa Cruz in the sixth round with a vicious uppercut to become the WBA super featherweight champion. What were your thoughts on the fight, my man Will T?
I think Leo Santa Cruz gave away the want gave away two of his best advantages coming into that fight. One was his level, his output level of activity, right? The amount of punches that Leo Santa Cruz historically has shown that he can throw during a round and sustain that pace over 12 rounds. That's one. And two, he gave up. Now, I don't know if this for a fact, but it looked as if Leo Santa Cruz was a taller fighter.
He looked like, yeah, he did. He looked like the taller fighter. He looked like it.
Yeah. And when he was on, you know, so he gave up his reach from being able to fight on the outside, which I think had he used would have been to his advantage. And two, he gave up his height, right? When Leo Santa Cruz crouched over a lat when he was throwing punches, right?
Yeah.
He didn't protect his chin. And, you know, Gervonta Tank Davis caught him with a very vicious left uppercut.
Oh, God.
That, you know, I was actually scared.
Me too, bro. Me too, man. I was with Al and we were watching. I was like, oh, my God, man, move, bro. When I saw him breathing, I felt a little better, but I was like, move, man.
Because me and you, we were texting back.
Yeah.
Back and forth. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, man, I'm just happy that he got up on his own.
You know,
and didn't need medical help. To regain consciousness.
Just because
we've seen over the past 2 years, some very dramatic injuries in the ring from guys taking big punches.
Yeah, it was scary, man. I thought Leo, like, I'm with you. Leo didn't throw enough, but I thought most of the rounds were very competitive. You know, I had it four. I did it before the knockdown. I had it 4-1 Tank. But even that was kind of blurred. You know what I'm saying? Because they were competitive rounds. It wasn't like dominating. You know, I just looked at it because, you know, Tank throws, you know, he throws violent punches. And like the punches that. Yeah, go ahead, Wilty.
No, go ahead. My apologies.
No. The punches that I saw. No, you're good.
No.
The punches that I saw, the reason why I did that, because I thought Tank threw the punches that felt like hurt more. But yeah, go ahead, continue.
I'll even go as far to say as up to a certain point in that six round prior to getting knocked out.
Yeah.
Leo Santa Cruz was making the case to win that sixth round.
I agree. That's what got me. It's crazy. I actually thought, and maybe I gotta go back and look at the fight again when it comes back on Saturday. I actually thought that I thought Leo hurt Tank a couple times. I thought he was
I thought he hurt him.
Yeah, okay, we're on the same page. I thought he hurt him for real, and then it was like, oh. And then I was thinking like, okay, if he gets him past, I know watching it, I was like thinking to myself, if he can get him to the eighth round, I think he can get him. Like I was thinking that, like I think Leo can get. I think Tank's on. He's gonna tire out. I think Leo's gonna get him. That's what I was thinking. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'm good. That was it, pretty much. That was it.
Just to reiterate, what you were saying, I was interested in seeing Leo, how the fight would potentially swing to Leo Santa Cruz's way as they went deeper into the fight, as Leo Santa Cruz continued to ramp up his level of production with throwing and landing punches against Gervonta Tank Davis, right? And I was interested in seeing would Tank Davis's power be sustainable in those later rounds, but we didn't get to see any of that because we saw in the sixth round
he did what he's supposed to do:
left uppercut, got him out of there.
Yeah, and it was he slid to the side and got him. So it was definitely the right play, man. Like, oh, all praise to Tank, man. Tank. He did the darn thing. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. So after Tank's performance, do you see a guy that could be a top five pound for pound? He could be top five on a pound for pound list.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because, you know, that fight just wasn't for the lightweight title.
Yes, it was for
the lightweight and junior lightweight title. So Tank Davis is the junior lightweight and lightweight title, and he said that he didn't have any problems making weight.
Yeah,
you know, he went out to Las Vegas, trained at Floyd Mayweather's gym, got his mind right. He hired a chef, really put in. He worked at a level
that he hadn't prior to this fight. You know, he didn't have to go. He came in, he made weight during the weigh-in on the first try.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see if he will go between 130 and 135 and those potential challenges at 130 and 135, because there are challenges for him. And if he, you know, steps up and takes those fights, he could potentially work his way up the pound for pound list, and he could be considered, you know, number, you know, in the top three,
yeah,
you know, depending on, you know, how
he looks,
a fight between Errol Spence and Terrence Bud Crawford would go.
Facts. It's like, I don't know, like, to me, he's a big 130. He can dominate 130 if he stayed at 130. 135 would be interesting because I think 130 is good for him. I do think it's good for him in the aspect that if we start talking the whole, you know, when we start talking Devin Haney, we start talking about some of these other boxers that have a bunch of power in their punch. I think that could be a dangerous fight for Tank, because he does it. He's helped. I mean, obviously he has his own trainer from Baltimore that's been loyal to him and only trains him. But also you got Mayweather in your camp, but he don't block like Mayweather. He's very hittable. Yeah. So it's
Look, Floyd Mayweather and that shoulder roll, there are very few fighters who are as great as mm-hmm. Floyd Mayweather defensively. Right?
Yeah.
But what Tank has that Floyd never had was
one hit a quitter
knockout capability mm-hmm. that, let's be frank, everyone in America loves, even casual fans love.
Oh, God, yeah.
When a fighter has that ability with a one punch to knock anyone out.
Yeah, man. He got it. He definitely got it. So who would you want to see Tank fight next then? Would it be at 130? Or would it be 135? Would you want to see him at 130 or 135?
I would love to see him at 135.
Okay.
You know, I don't think a Devin Haney fight is a fight that would be scheduled this, you know, at this junction of their career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Gervonta Davis, that was his first pay-per-view fight. He's clearly established himself as a pay-per-view commodity.
Yep.
You know, the names, of course, we would like to see him versus Teofimo Lopez down the line.
Of course.
A name that interests me and he stated that he plans on jumping weight is actually, I wouldn't call him I don't know if he's a friend of, I call him a friend.
Yeah,
of
he's a friend of the show. Yeah, I know you're talking about
Gary Russell.
Yeah, he's a friend of the show. That's a friend of the show.
Mm-hmm. I would love to see a PG versus Baltimore fight featuring Tank Davis and Gary Russell Jr. But the only thing is, I want to see Gary Russell Jr. at 130.
I think that can happen.
At 135, whichever, if he decides to jump up weight.
Yeah.
I want to see him one or two fights at that weight.
Before he fights him.
Guys go at.
So you want to see him fight before he gets a Tank? It's a guy that.
I want to see how he handles
the weight. No, I get
The weight.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I think it's very fair to say. I want to see that fight. I think, and to be real with you, we can all tell that, you know, Gary wants a big fight. It's the same. It's just he's talking a lot, so he wants a big fight. This is a fight that can happen if he truly wants it to happen in this aspect. Like, Tank is pay per view now. Like you just said it right, Wilty. He pay per view now.
Yeah.
So you're just going to have to. You may have to take less, bro. It is what it is. I know it is what it is. You know, you gotta take less. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
Will. No, go ahead.
No, go.
Another fight I would like to see him, and I don't think this fight would happen, is him versus Ryan Garcia.
Oh, man, yeah. See, I think, again, all right, so this is the thing. Tank, like, the shots that Leo was hitting him with, because Leo throw punches, and Leo don't have the power of Ryan that Ryan Garcia has. And I don't even want to talk about Teofimo, because I don't like that matchup for Tank. I really don't like that matchup for Tank. But we're looking at Ryan Garcia now. I think it would be an entertaining fight. But my thing about that is that they're both going to go. Like, they're going to go in the middle of the ring, and somebody going to get knocked out for real. Like, and I didn't, like I mentioned to you before, Will, like, I thought that Leo was hurting him a little bit. And I don't think Leo's punching power ain't, it's okay. It's good. It's solid. It's not good. It's solid. It's nothing special. Now, you get there with Ryan, and you take the, if Ryan is hitting you with those same punches, I don't know if he's standing up. Like, I don't know if he's standing up.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
But it's a, I don't know if it's a, it's a fight that would be able to be made just because Ryan Garcia is on Golden Boy.
Yeah.
No.
And Floyd.
No, I, let's just be frank.
Let's be real, right? Yeah.
You know, there's some angst between Al Heyman, or I'm not going to even say there's angst between those two. Oscar De La Hoya, I believe, sued Al Heyman in the past.
And you got Mayweather, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then there's also the De La Hoya and Mayweather aspect of it, which I think that piece of it itself would help sell the fight.
Oh, yeah, man. It'd be great. I think it'd be an awesome fight. I think Ryan Garcia, that's the fight, actually, I would want to see the most, to be real with you. I mean, no. PG Bolton would be the first one. Ryan Garcia versus, because I think that has so much potential in terms of promotion. I think it does better for this region. And you can hype that element on a national scale. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can play it. Like, you can really make it work. You can make it happen to a point where now you're making it. You can have this pay-per-view buy. It could be something vicious, especially if you put a good undercard with it. Bruh, you can make it a special, special fight. You can have it. And to be real with you, again, because who's holding more clout right now, you can put it in B-more. You can put it at the Royal Farms Arena and then let it go. You can just do that.
I don't think you would put it in the Royal Farms.
So you would do it at MGM?
I think you would put it at the Barclays Center.
Ooh, so you wouldn't have it in the area.
You could have it in the area, but let's look at the options. The options would be Capital One Arena.
Oh, okay. Right? Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Capital One Arena, the MGM, which I don't think the MGM would be able to fit enough
people. I agree. Yeah.
The people who would want to come in, see that fight, or you would have it at the Royal Farms Arena in Baltimore, which, you know, I don't think that makes the best entertainment.
Yeah.
Entertainment weekend for people to, to come and see the fight. Mm. This is no knock against Baltimore.
No, it's not.
I love Baltimore. I went to undergrad in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. But from an entertainment standpoint, outside of the harbor, people really aren't going to, move around Baltimore.
No, that's facts. You're right.
But, if you put it in Brooklyn, you put it at the Barclays.
Ah, yeah, tours of it. Yeah, I got
people
you.
People from Baltimore, people from PG, Prince George's County, D.C., because to drive up to the fight. Then you also have people from New York. And you have people from Philadelphia, and you have, Tank Davis proved that he was a draw in Atlanta, in Atlanta. You have people from Atlanta fly up there.
And you had the folks.
I just think it makes more sense from a business perspective.
That does make sense. I mean, I can't deny that. And then you'll have the pure boxing fans who who go to Vegas. They'll be up there too. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. New York does make sense in terms of like the touristy. Also, when you a fight weekend, you want to be at a place where you can kind of have a good time and then see the fight.
Yeah, man.
So, yeah.
Could you imagine that fight in New York during the spring?
Oh, man.
2021?
It'd be a beast.
Or the summer of 2020?
Yeah.
Or the summer of 2021?
It would be like that.
Oh, my God.
But also, you would probably want to do that. Be honest, you would probably want to do that fight when stuff opens up, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, you would wait it out. You wouldn't rush it.
You would wait. Yeah, you would have to wait it out.
Mm. Yeah, man, that's true. Fact.
But the fight with Ryan Garcia, that's a great fight. But I think that's a fight that you need to build up.
You do
a little bit more.
You do.
You know, Ryan Garcia is very popular on
social media.
He has like 6 million followers, I believe, on Instagram.
But you got to fight more.
Floyd Mayweather, that's probably the most of any fighter.
Yeah.
He fights on DAZN.
Yeah.
be honest. Not that many people watch.
That's true, man. You gotta fight more. I mean, you gotta fight. But I mean, just like anything, like this was the, I guess, Leo was the best talented Javante has seen. So, I mean, both to me are like, and Ryan Garcia has to see more. I agree, has to see more. But it's definitely interesting times, man. Some exciting times. Boxing can go so many different ways at 135, 130. Like, it can go so many different ways right now. So it just, there's a lot of big fights that could happen, and hopefully they do happen. We didn't get a chance to make our week 9 NFL picks on air, but you can find the picks on Football Garbage Time on the Football Garbage Time website at www.footballgarbagetime.com. Go ahead, Wilton. I know you want to say something.
You'll find mine posted around 8 p.m. Thursday. I'm currently in a battle with someone I won't name. So I don't want to give him any competitive advantage of my picks prior to the world knowing my picks.
Again, it's what Will's referring to is part of the Urban Sports Team versus Football Garbage Time Challenge. And Will T has mentioned, he's in second place and holding it down for the Urban Sports Team.
Yeah, I gained one game.
You did, man.
One game. I'm walking them down.
You're walking them down, bro. You're walking them down.
This is a heavyweight fight.
Yeah.
Look. I gave up the first 4 or 5 rounds.
Yeah.
Round 6 through 12, those me.
That's your close. Hey, championship rounds, bro. The championship rounds. You know I'm rooting for you. Even though you talk all that trash, you know I'm rooting for you. It's in the family, bro. Exactly. Hey, separately, I'm now eliminated from the Survivor League. I was going strong, but damn.
Oh, Denver. You were going strong, too.
Yeah, the Denver, man. That stupid comeback. I had him too. I was hoping that the Buccaneers had upset it with lose to the Giants, then everybody would have been eliminated the same day. Cause both of them picked Tampa over the Giants. That was too easy. I didn't want to do that. But Drew Lock had to like ruin my life. You know what I'm saying? Cause I had a good opportunity to like hold it down and still be in the things. But it's all good. Good luck to y'all,
it's
folks.
All good,
man. Yeah, man. I ain't a sore loser. Good luck to the folks at Football Garbage Time. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. And check us out at Sports Journey at sportsjourney.com. It's election Tuesday. Hopefully, we gave y'all that break. You got to listen to sports. You were entertained. You've been blessed. You can bask in our glory. All that good jazz. And also, man, don't sweat. Don't stay up too late to watch what happens. You ain't going to change anything.
At the end of the day, yes, certain policies can change and affect you on a local level. But at the end of the day, man, you're still going to wake up tomorrow. You're going to be incredibly blessed. You'll be thankful for being alive. And you'll still have to provide for yourself and your family and still be a contributing member to society. So, don't let the next 12, 24, 36, 48, or 72 hours, however long it takes for us to, decide on who the next president of the United States is.
Yeah.
Don't stress yourself out over it.
Yeah, man. Sleep. Enjoy life, man. Carpe diem, man. Seize the day.
You are extremely blessed.
Definitely.
All
man.
Of us.
All of
Let's
us.
Just whoever wins, just realize and recognize that we have to share, we have to spread happiness and spread peace amongst each other.
Definitely.
It starts with us.
Definitely does start with us. All right, man. We appreciate you all for listening. You've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You did.
Deuces.
Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie.